Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Max Herz here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing well, fellas. How you guys doing this morning?
Great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Charles, I want to get your thoughts on the Ray Horton situation, adding to Brian Flores' lawsuit against the National Football League, and more specifically, the comments that have come out from Mike Mularkey that somehow we all missed back in 2020, at least here locally. We all missed these comments in 2020 on a Steelers Realm podcast, basically that he knew he had the job heading into the interview. What do you make of this whole situation, and specifically, what do you think the comments made by Mularkey tells you and says about this process?
Well, first and foremost, I was stunned that we all missed it. Like, I when I listen to the audio, I'm just like, how on earth did this stay buried for, you know, more than a year? And probably the most damning allegations I've ever heard about the Rooney Rule, you know, when you have a former head coach coming out and saying that, you know, ownership told me I had the job. The GM, the sitting current GM, didn't know why I was going through the interview process with him. And, you know, the contrition, and it sounded about as genuine as it could, you know, it sounded, and it was another thing that struck me about it was such an open-ended question. You know, they just asked him about any career regrets. And then he dives into this thing that clearly from their response, it sounded like they didn't expect him to bring that to the table. But you know, when he expressed the contrition about knowing people in the process who are going through these interviews and feeling like they had no shot at the job and then calling it a fake interview process. I mean, that's, you know, for the NFL, it's a bit of a nightmare. I think for the organization, it's a bit of a nightmare, which obviously the organization's saying it's not true. I don't, you know, it's a difficult, you know, allegation to prove, but I think it does clearly overlap with the experiences that some of these folks are bringing to the table. You know, Brian Flores, obviously Ray Horton, you know, Steve Wilks talks a little bit about, you know, he joins the suit and he's talking about how he felt like his 1 year in Arizona, you know, he wasn't given a fair shake there. And, you know, I think what it underscores is the Rooney Rule itself, you know, there's flaws there. And, you know, it clearly was part of a problem instead of, you know, the resolution that it hoped to provide. And, you know, I think the NFL, what we've seen the last couple of seasons is what we're going to continue to see. It's a pretty tangled mess. And I do think that this lawsuit, though, is provoking the league to push harder, to take steps to try and remedy, you know, what it clearly sees as a problem that the data obviously supports, that, you know, there's some hiring issues inside the NFL, some nepotism issues. There's a lot of different, you know, things that are tied to this that are starting to come up. And just from being at the last owners meetings, you can tell the league is motivated to attack this thing, you know, either out of fear of that lawsuit or just out of sheer embarrassment.
So if you, I know you love these questions, I'm going to put you in charge, Charles. Charles in charge.
Fun.
Of the Rooney Rule, you can get rid of it, strengthen it any way you want, alter it any way you want. I think we could all agree, like, there's no clear answer to get absolutely this results in the desired outcome. But what would you do?
You're putting me in charge of a decision that they can't even solve, and they're paid millions of dollars. You know, there's people on the payroll making millions of dollars, you know, trying to figure out how to resolve this issue. I don't think it's you know, so far, a lot of what's being done is very bottom up. You know, it's create a larger pipeline, create a pipeline on offense, which is where a lot of NFL hires are coming from. But again, I don't see it being a top down. You know, at what point does the league start to look at this from a top down aspect, you know, ownership in the NFL, because it's ownership is a very, it's a very, the fraternity that is NFL ownership has not changed significantly over time. When you talk about life experience, when you talk about race, when you talk about politics of, I mean, it's a very similar sort of group of people, and it has remained very similar throughout the years. And from a wealth standpoint, it's remained very similar. And now the NFL is trying to figure out, particularly with the Denver Broncos going up for sale, is there an opportunity here to change some of the dynamics in a room where, you know, heavy-hitting decisions are made? Well, if the Broncos are going up for sale, and already there's rumors that the Walton family, you know, might be taking a crack at this, okay? That's so typical. I mean, that's the NFL. They're going to go out there and they're going to end up courting, you know, the biggest billionaires and the people that already kind of represent that room. I don't know. It's not an easy thing to resolve, and that's why it's, I think it's going to be a struggle, and it's going to take a lot of years, and it's going to take maybe some things happening organically that we don't understand. I'll give you an example. Like when I started covering the league 20 years ago, there was still a lot of conversations about black quarterbacks. You know, there's still, you know, I remember, you know, talking to executives, and there was still this idea that, like, hey, you know, this may never really change, even though there's a push for it to change. And what people didn't foresee is what changed on the collegiate level and the NFL's, you know, free feeder system, its free minor leagues, sort of forced the league to change its perception of black quarterbacks because they were being groomed at a lower level and becoming great players, and the NFL couldn't ignore that. That changed organically below the NFL level. It forced the NFL to change, you know, over a longer timeline. Black executives in the NFL, it's another good example, you know, particularly from the general manager standpoint. You know, I think analytics opened up slots for a number of guys that hold those positions now. I think that you saw more road scouts instead of, for a number of years in personnel departments, a lot of like former players would end up like on the pro personnel side. And, you know, I guess you can kind of argue or try to figure out why that dynamic occurred. But, you know, some, as they started to end up as road scouts or doing more scouting work, I think it opened up their resume and their ability to ascend into general manager positions as well. So it's, I wonder if there are some organic things here that could change and help this situation while the NFL is trying to attack it in a very deliberate kind of way. But I wish I could tell you I could resolve it, but I've written about this for for years and years and years now. And it's, you know, some years it seems a lot worse and like it's getting worse, and that's how it felt this year. Some years it feels like it's getting better. But over a long enough timeline, not enough has changed.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Charles, obviously just a really tragic situation with Dwayne Haskins over the weekend losing his life at age 24. And we were talking about this yesterday on the show. Like, I was just kind of blown away from the reaction to his death. Anywhere from the Schefter tweet to just the stupidity of the Gil Brandt stuff as well.
Yeah.
It just kind of felt like all day long it was really dehumanizing the event that took place. What was kind of your thoughts on the reaction to Dwayne Haskins and his death at the age of 24?
Yeah, I mean, some of the unfortunate stuff that gets said, it's, I mean, we've all worked in this arena long enough to know that sports often is very reductive, and the first way a lot of people measure, you know, anyone in the NFL is based on success or failure. And unfortunately, we saw examples where that was something immediately attached to a tragedy. Someone's football career should not become fodder for framing, you know, a death that is awful. That's terrible. I mean, a guy, you know, he's on the doorstep of turning 25 years old. You can say whatever you want about, you know, Dwayne Haskins' career, but, you know, he's a first-round pick in the NFL, and you know, he changed a lot at Ohio State from the, in terms of the quarterback position. When you look at You know, the level of quarterbacks that they're getting at Ohio State. I mean, he had a pretty big imprint on football in a short period of time. And anything that happened, you know, on the NFL level, it had nothing to do with, you know, the death, what happened. And, yeah, I mean, it sucked to see that. It really did. And thankfully, as time's gone on a little bit, we've seen a lot of people come out who knew him as a person and have added a lot to that picture that I think people lacked before. And I'll be honest with you, like, I've fallen into this trap in the past of using the word bust, which I'm trying to not use. You know, I'm trying to get away from that because it's such a catch-all kind of toxic word for guys. And it often sort of bleeds into what we think about them or what fans think about them, like, as a person. And part of what changed that for me, or at least the effort to try and change it, like, years ago I met Ryan Leaf at a Super Bowl. And I was, like, completely floored by the strides he'd made as a person, you know, his willingness to talk about being flawed, like, all these different things. And I walked away from it feeling really guilty because I'm like, man, for years I kind of hammered this guy about football, hammered him about other things that went on in his personal life. And, you know, never thought about the reality that he could grow. And, you know, I think that's part of the Haskins story, that, you know, we really don't know how much he had grown since he had gone to Pittsburgh. All we know is, you know, what the Steelers are saying publicly now. Another thing, too, about his death, I mean, let's be clear here. We have no clue what happened, okay? Like, even trying to understand what happened that day, I mean, there's such a lack of information out there. So all we know is it's a young guy that died, and, you know, it's devastating for his family and his friends and anyone who reaches that pinnacle of playing in the NFL at the quarterback position, being a first-round pick, to have that end at such a young age. I can't even – I mean, I'm not a parent. I can't even imagine how hard it is to lose a child, but let alone you lose a child that worked so hard to, you know, get to that, you know, level of a very prestigious and prominent place in our culture.
Well, think back to, like, when we were on a college beat together too. I think sometimes about, like, you know, what things said and written over the years. You're like, gosh, you know, you kind of
I mean, I think back to, you know, earlier, you know, and I was funny. I was talking to a couple other guys on a show yesterday and about, like, my 20s and how many cringeworthy things I probably wrote or said. Or, you know, like I said, being really reductive about criticism. And, you know, you get older and you start to realize that these are human beings. And, you know, mental health becomes such a big thing now in sports. And it wasn't something that even 20 years ago a lot of people really wanted to talk about. And
ever.
Ever. And it really just changed. I think a lot of has changed in the landscape where there's still a lot of effort there to look at, you know, players as humans the same way we look at them as players. But I do think that the sort of fallout after Haskins shows that at least the criticism's there to stand up and go, hey, this isn't right, okay? like, let's not do this. Let's not fall into this. And I think that's a good conversation to have, you know, on the heels of this.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. Charles, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with us.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
You as well. Charles Robinson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Tune in for Nashville Sounds baseball tonight on ESPN 94.9 as the Sounds begin a six-game road series against the Gwinnett Stripers, the AAA affiliate of the World Series champion Atlanta Braves. The pregame show with Jeff Hem starts at 5:50 and first pitch is at 6:05. Nashville Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9 presented by 312 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Spirited Hive. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Pro Golf coming to Nashville as well this May with the Simmons Bank Open. Text the keyword GOLF to 615-737-1025 for a chance to win a weekend pass for four to enjoy the event in style, including food and drink, plus a Predators gift pack, including a polo shirt, golf balls, and an umbrella. Text GOLF now to 615-737-1025 to be entered to win. Speaking of the Predators, Chris Mason coming up here in just a few minutes at 9:30. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds as they take on the San Jose Sharks coming up tonight at Bridgestone Arena. Puck drop 7 o'clock, pregame 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. A lot of reaction earlier to the who is the closest team to winning a professional or closest professional team to winning a championship here in our state. We did have one vote for Vols baseball.
Yes.
We're talking pros.
If we included college and pro, then I'd put them first. I mean, they're my favorite to win
would.
It.
Yeah.
Max Herz, are they your favorite to win it all? Vols baseball. Tony Vitello.
Sure.
Sure? That doesn't sound like – I mean, that just sounds like you're just sort of like, I don't really want to talk about this.
Well, I don't think I've seen a second of any Big 12-type team this year or ACC
team. Yeah, but isn't the SEC the best? Doesn't it just mean more?
They will have the most teams in the regionals, as usual, but – they also may cannibalize each other's in supers, as we see every year.
Sure. I didn't ask you if they will definitely win it, but are they the favorite to win it? They are the clear favorite. Am I wrong?
Yeah, they have to be.
Okay.
Right?
All right. Then yes was the answer then. I'm just saying. Whatever.
My Big 12 and ACC baseball knowledge right now is not where it will be in June.
And you're just going to discount the Big 10? No, I'm just kidding. Big Ten sucks.
Big baseball conference.
Shout out
to Michigan.
I do love all the games they play in the Vikings Stadium. Yeah. Laid out like the Metrodome.
Yes.
Have you not seen this, Joe?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's great.
Really?
They bring three or four Big Ten teams in together for a weekend.
Yeah.
They do it up like the Metrodome old baseball layout with the crazy high right field, and they play in an 80,000-seat stadium with like 35 people there.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's great.
It's
really?
Awesome.
I didn't know this. Okay.
Well, you have to because it's probably still 30 degrees there right now.
Yeah, exactly. Now you're giving me Kent Herbeck and Kirby Puckett nightmares from the 80s.
With the hockey boards on the outfield wall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God, I hated those teams. Anyway, yeah, Tennessee would be number one. Tennessee baseball would be number one. But if you're going just by professional teams, you got four possibilities. It's actually a pretty good situation when you consider that none of the four are just completely dismissed. Like, that team's garbage. Although some Preds fans apparently would rather their team be garbage so that they can try to get the number one pick at some point.
Liam on the text line says, last time I thought or cared about anything Memphis was the last Oilers game there in 97. It looked great in the rearview mirror. This coming from Liam on the text line.
Is that the game against the Steelers when it was all Steelers fans?
Yeah, probably.
I've heard a lot about that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I really am interested. In fact, I want to look at where the poll is right now that Max put out there because I would love for this city to get wrapped up in the Grizzlies and get wrapped up in the NBA. I would be giddy about that. I have my doubts. Now, I heard, in fact, I meant to ask Darren this yesterday on their show. He said that they've gotten feedback that tells them definitely people are into the Grizzlies. I'd like to know what that is.
Well, I would too. And how that, especially now, how does that translate come playoff time? Because, like, I fully believe this because I'm kind of this way too. Like, I paid attention to the Grizzlies, but I don't really care in the regular season. Now that it's playoff time, I'm in. I hope they make a deep run. I'm a Heat fan, so I'm going to be watching the Miami Heat. But, I mean, if the Grizzlies go on a big run, I'm all in, baby.
Well, I mean, look, for the NBA and NHL, both for me, I watch – you know, obviously I watch the Preds a lot because I write about the Preds. So that's totally different. But I watch a game here and there in the NHL. I watch a game here and there in the NBA in the regular season.
Yep.
You know, fair amount of the Warriors because I live in a Warriors household somehow.
You do.
But really, even that, it's like, okay, watch the end of a game or something. Playoffs, completely different. I will give me every second of any Stanley Cup playoff game. Give me every second of any NBA playoff game. And then when you actually have a local team that can do something in either of them, I think it's great. It's a very underrated part of the sports year to me.
William and Madison on the text line says, I'm not an NBA fan now, but one of my favorite memories as a kid was when Larry Bird stole the ball against the Pistons in the playoffs. My guess, breaking the heart of young Joe Rexrow. This coming from William from Madison on the text line.
Can we ban people on the text line? Can we?
Oh, man.
I've talked about that play on this show several times, William.
Yeah.
Now you've made me angry.
Rex rant.
You don't even understand how upset I was. I was watching that game live in Dahran, Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
So it was at what time? It was like 2 in the morning. It was a school night. And I was watching that game because that's how much I cared about those Detroit Pistons. Thank you for bringing that up. I'm really mad at you now.
Got a lot of Calebs on the text line this morning. Keith texting in says, there's more Calebs this morning than in the Old Testament. Keith on the text line. Could be a lot of Calebs out there. We welcome all Calebs. We had a texter earlier ask us if Caleb Farley was the texter, talking about the Titans drafting injured players.
If so. He rebukes it in the name of Jesus, and we know so. It's him. It's a good week for that.
It is. Nate on the text line says, I wonder how much angst there still is between Memphis and Nashville due to the Oilers-Titans temporary time in Memphis, and fans got mad when they left, even though they knew it was going to happen. It's coming from Nate on the text line.
Well, yeah, there's still – in fact, so we had Jeff Calkins on earlier. He wrote a really good piece. I think he may have still been at the commercial appeal when he did this. A really good piece about that whole thing, about Memphis and the whole Titans thing and how – some people still harbor resentment and everything. It was interesting. I think it was when the Titans maybe were making their run a couple years ago. But also, I've heard from people, and I think I actually got into this a little bit in that Morant column I talked about, that more and more in Memphis you see on Sundays that places have the Titans games on. Like for a long time, no way, forget about it, put anything but them on. But now it's kind of, you know, things are going to thaw over time, aren't they? They should.
I mean, there's a natural rivalry for whatever reason between Memphis and Nashville anyway that's always been fascinating to me. But, yeah, I think it's softening a little bit. They are the Tennessee Titans.
You know? Well, and that's the difference. So you would never expect someone from Philly to root for the Steelers or someone from Pittsburgh to root for the Flyers, right? But they also have competing teams in those leagues. So when you have a state like this where we still obviously don't have the inventory of pro teams that a lot of states do, I mean, they all can – you can be a Titans, Preds, and Grizzlies fan.
Yeah.
I don't see why not, but some people have that hang-up about either city.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds as they take on the San Jose Sharks coming up tonight. Show us your bad Easter photos. From pastel overload to horrible bunny costumes, we want to see it all. You could win a family four-pack of tickets to a Nashville Sounds home game or the grand prize of a two-night stay at Gaylord Opryland Hotel with access to their fabulous Soundwaves water park as well. Submit photos now at thegamenashville.com/Easter for your chance to enter and win. Chris Mason up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30 plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Max Hurst are with you on this Tuesday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Preds TV analyst, former Preds goaltender Chris Mason, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. See, Mace, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Not too much. Just driving down to the rink, and it's beautiful, gorgeous weather.
Yeah, it's awesome outside today. Really, really looking forward to getting outside in it. Coming up here in just a few minutes. C-Mates, Preds taking on the Sharks tonight. What do you make of where the Preds sit right now in the standings and the opportunity starting tonight with five consecutive games at Bridgestone Arena?
Well, I honestly think that, you know, I know they only got 1 point in the last four, but I think their defensive game is maybe the best two back-to-back games in a row in terms of the defensive side of things. I thought Florida, they did a great job. They only gave up, two shots to Huberdeau, one to Barkov. They didn't really have much. Huberdeau gets the empty net goal. I thought they contained, you know, one of the highest-powered offensive teams in the league quite well. And then Pittsburgh, same thing. I thought they did a really good job of keeping most of the threats to the outside, kind of perimeter stuff. Obviously, these teams are going to get, you know, some chances, and they're going to create on their own, and there's, you know, pretty much nothing you can do with it. When a team executes, just like on the flip side when the Predators are making plays. But defensively, I like where their game's at right now, and I think going down the stretch, the last little while prior to these two games, that was kind of my biggest concern was, you know, giving up free chances, turnovers, coverage plays, maybe a little too aggressive pushing forward, some maybe decision-making, soft passes through the middle. But the last few games, they kind of shored that up. So, you know, the homestand here, this is big. I mean, you're not going to get any help from anybody. You got to do it yourself, and I know that's what they want to do. you know, the competition varies, starting with San Jose, who everyone thinks, oh, you got to beat San Jose, that's 2 points in the bank. Well, if you don't play the right way, it's not. I think we've seen that, you know, more than enough here lately, but you got to take care of home ice. They've been good there all year, so hopefully they start with a strong performance tonight.
Teammates, Malkin gets 4 games, a 4-game suspension, for the cross check the other day. But of course, there's no help there for the Preds, and I wouldn't suggest that is why the Preds lost. But I think he should have gotten a major, and it should have been a different outcome. And I don't understand Borowiecki getting a penalty. So when you look at that situation, what needs to be different about the way the NHL does things in situations like that?
You know, I think everybody agrees with you that, you know, the TNT panel there is saying, you know, their guess on it was 3 to 10 games, vicious cross-check. I don't know. I feel like they're able to review the double minor. I think something in that situation, you got to huddle up with the crew and you got to get that right, because I guarantee you that if that happened the other way around, Borowiecki would have got a 2, 5, and a 10. He would have been out of the game. And that's probably what it should have been for Malkin, and then obviously reviewed by the league, and the Department of Player Safety does whatever it does with it. But I just think that's terrible, because you know for a fact, you've got a pretty good feeling that had Borowiecki been the one that dished out that cross-check, and the fact that Borowiecki stays up, I mean, you got to get those ones right. You know, the little hooks or the little cross-check that get dives, you know, it's tough for the referee to get that right during the game. You got to live with the good ones and the bad ones. But those ones, I mean, that's a pretty pivotal call in a hockey game. You got a 2-minute power play, or you got, you know, 7 minutes on the power play with it was a 2 and a 5. So that was definitely, it's tough to swallow, but at the end of the day, as a player, you just go out there and you can only, you know, deal with what the situation is. And I thought they did a good job, but it was just too bad, because, you know, it could have been 2 points instead of one.
Chris Mason on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. See, Mace, I mean, look, there are pros and cons to any way you do the lineup. If you're John Hines, if you go back to Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne, you can load up, and there's a lot of offense that could come from that line, but it takes away from other lines. If you split them up, maybe they're not quite as effective individually as they would be together. There's a bunch of different ways you could look at it. What do you make of the decision that John Hines has made to split Forsberg and Duchesne up, and what do you think is the strategy that should be employed moving forward as they get closer to the playoffs?
Well, I really, you know, in theory, I like what that move does, because it gives you two lines essentially that should be able to produce offensively. I know he'll put Johansson, Duchesne, and Forsberg after they, you know, kill penalties, just because those guys don't kill some offensive zone stuff. But maybe on an icing, we'll load those guys up. But in theory, if they can get some production on that second line and the top line can continue to produce, and you can get those guys back together on the power play, it makes a lot of sense for me. But I guess you just have to see where it goes, because the well's kind of dried up a little bit here. But you're playing against a couple tough teams. I didn't expect Florida to be as good as defensively as they were. Maybe it was because it was the second game of back-to-back. They locked it down a little more, but I like that. So I'm the coach or whoever, I'm willing to try to stick with that, because essentially I think in playoffs you're going to need two lines that have, you know, some offense threats on them. So we'll have to see where this goes. But I mean, you could always go back and load up that line. And didn't matter. It seemed to matter to them who they were playing against. They were getting it done night in, night out. So that's always been ace in the hole, I think, for Hines.
Seamus, how are you feeling right now about UC Saros and where he is? Had some ups and downs. We've talked about the workload. It's been huge. It's been way different than the rest of his career. Where do you think he is right now?
Oh, I think he's in a great spot. I really do. I thought, you know, maybe a couple weeks ago I was thinking, maybe there might be some fatigue. I thought with not just him, but the way the team was playing. And, you know, for him, you just can't sustain that Superman, you know, almost perfect style of play where you're winning games every single night. And a lot of those games, you know, let's be honest, they didn't deserve to win because of the types of chances and the amount of quality chances they were giving up. It just, you know, you just can't sustain that. And as good as UC Saros is, and even his bad times or his downs, they're not that down. You know, he's been he's been a pillar of consistency this season, but I really like how his game right now. I thought in Florida he was fantastic the game before. Love giving him the rest. Riddick comes in, and that's a big thing, too, I think, for the team. Is he comes in there, puts a solid performance, earns a point for the boys, and but it'll be interesting to see how this week, you know, when you just mentioned all the home games, does he play every game this week? I don't know. We'll have to see. I guess the results will dictate some of that. I know they haven't went Sarles on back-to-back nights, but I think his game is in order right now. And we're getting down to the nitty-gritty, so this is the best time to heat back up.
C-Mace, do you feel the momentum kind of sliding Yossi's way in terms of the Norris Trophy conversation right now?
I really feel, and you guys follow this too just as much as I do, but I really feel there's been a narrative shift. And I think once, you know, everybody started talking about just the layers of Yossi's game, how well-rounded he is, and then obviously what Yossi's done in March and just continues to do is, it's just he's having a historic season, and this is one of the things I think when you get, you know, ingrained in sports and you're following the storyline, he's having one of the greatest seasons in the history of the NHL. And Cale Makar's having an awesome season. Even if Cale Makar gets a 30 goals, which is absolutely incredible, he should win the Norris on any other given year. But, you know, guys have scored 30, and it's been attained here in the last whatever 15, 10 years. Nobody, if Yossi continues the pace he's on right now, nobody's done this in over 30 years. And you're talking, he's in the company of some of the greatest defensemen to ever play the game, Bobby Orr, Paul Coffey, Dennis Pop. You go on and on and on. And Yossi's right up there with any of these guys. So I really do, when I put my stamp on, hey, this guy's got to, you know, win the Vezina, or this guy's got to win, I don't say it unless I 100% mean it. And I really do think Yossi, if you look at some of the other guys, the points that he generates of the team's percentage that he is in on is up there with Connor McDavid. Some of the best forwards. The next closest defenseman is like 7 or 8% less in the National Hockey League. So I really believe that he should be under serious consideration for the Hart Trophy. I think the Norris is a lock, but that's just me.
Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, former Preds goaltender, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Tuesday morning at 9:30, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. C-Mace, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us.
Thank you, guys. Just enjoy the beautiful day, okay?
Yeah, we will do our best. You do the same. Preds taking on the Sharks tonight at Bridgestone Arena. We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Tickets for the Music City Grand Prix, which is coming up on August the 5th through the 7th, go on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. 1025 The Game has your chance to win 3-day passes to the Music City Grand Prix right now. Just text the word RACE to the Game Nashville text line at 615-737-1025 to be qualified to win. More details on the Music City Grand Prix can be found at MusicCityGP.com. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stop by Social Furniture at 5412 Charlotte Avenue in Nashville and enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Chicago Blackhawks coming up at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday. Also, don't forget to check out their new sofas while you're in there. You must be 18 or older to enter the contest. No purchase is necessary. Also, make sure you join ESPN 102.5 The Game for the Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament, benefiting Folds of Honor, coming up on May 16th at Hermitage Golf Course. Put your team together and come play with the athletes, musicians, and other local celebrities. You can sign up at thegamenashville.com/golf. What a jam bringing us back in today.
See, yeah, I mean, it's fine. See, I feel – I don't want to – Max just told me that he remembers when he played When I'm 64, and I was like, yeah, why are you playing this song? Early Beatles, I'm not a huge fan of. It's okay. It's still good. It's not bad. It's good.
Okay. But, take your word for it.
Well, you take their last five albums, and it's the greatest rock and roll ever made.
And what are the last five?
So, let's see. Well, I actually might include Rubber Soul, but Revolver, Sgt. Pepper's, Magical Mystery Tour, White Album, and Abbey Road. It's like it's unmatched. Like no other band could even
see.
I don't even count Let It Be.
See, don't we love how like we have these conversations about sports and about like how all these athletes get better over time and like there's there's this belief system out there that the 80s and 90s in the NBA was apparently just like peak athleticism and peak NBA. But we talk about all the time here on the show, you know, the athletes have actually gotten better. Things have gotten better. But musically, we just leave everything behind. The Beatles were as good as it gets. Never gets any better.
I don't know about that comparison, man. Athletes get better because they get bigger, faster, stronger. I mean, is there someone better than Picasso? I don't know.
Could be. Bob Ross? Are you kidding me?
I'm not an art.
Yes, there is someone better than Picasso.
I think in art you could have like the greatest sculptor was like lived in the 600s. Isn't that possible? Am I wrong
about
that?
Is sculpting less of a habit now or more? I don't know the answer to that. There's more people.
But I think you have to separate art from competition, don't you?
Sure.
Okay. The Beatles are the best ever, period. Okay. End of discussion.
You weren't ready for that Bob Ross comment, were you?
That was very good. That was very good.
Gator Tim on the text line says, the Steelers game that was 95% Steelers fans was actually at Vanderbilt in 98. If Joe was there, he would claim that it was 75% Titans fans, though. This is coming from Gator Tim on the text line.
Nice.
So I guess Gator Tim is one of the ones that was at the Bills game where there was 90% Bills fans there.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's actually – I'm not saying that there wasn't a 98 game at Vanderbilt, but 100%, I've read the accounts.
Yeah.
Liberty Bowl, 97.
Oh, yeah.
Steelers fans took over the place. So you're actually wrong, even though you're partially right, I guess. Like, I'll believe you that there was a Steelers – that the Steelers came here the next year, too. That's not the game we're talking about.
John the Mailman texting in says, take the whole Beatles discography and throw it right in the trash. It's coming from John the Mailman. I love how this argument comes up like every 4 weeks here on the show.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even going to engage in this crap. Not even going to engage. But Huffy throws out Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah.
White Album Best Ever. Yeah, it's close, man. White Album or Abbey Road, it's close. So close.
Keith texting in says, I will not listen to any Bob Ross slander. There's no slander here.
No one's ripping Bob Ross. I hadn't thought about the Picasso leading to Bob Ross.
Think Picasso could have had a TV show? I think not.
Yeah, what would Picasso have done on public access television? Probably would have failed.
Brett's taking on the Sharks tonight. By the way, David Poyle joining Darren Donick and Chase coming up at 11:15. So interested to hear that conversation with David Poyle at 11:15 this morning. We talked about this earlier. Any concern to you? Any more concerned to you, probably is the better way to put it, that it's April the 12th and there's still no contract for Philip Forsberg. I feel like it's gotten lost in the weeds a little bit. Obviously, there's a playoff race going on right now and a lot of things happening, but April 12th, still no contract extension for Philip Forsberg at this point.
Yeah, I think there is some concern, and I would like every question to David Poyle today to be about the Philip Forsberg contract. Let's get some details going here. Let's get some numbers out there.
So, David, when did this conversation begin? What number did you start with? What number did he start with? And let's just go from there.
I mean, if you believe you're right as a GM, throw it out there for the public to know. Maybe that public pressure will influence Forsberg's agent, and you'll have a happy conclusion to this today.
Maybe.
Some point. I mean, if it's trending toward you're going to lose him, go to desperate measures.
Why not?
Tell Darren Donick and Chase all about it. At least, I mean, I am interested to hear. Like, because, of course, we read into tone and you know, word usage and everything, and sometimes totally read wrong, like the combine every year.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we've talked about this. I've always been under the impression that eventually a deal is going to get done because I know. Like, he wants to be here. But it's not always as simple as that in terms of contract negotiation. So I said it earlier, I'll stand by it. Like, I still believe if you force me to pick right now, is he going to hit free agency or is he going to re-sign with the Predators? I'm still saying he's going to re-sign with the Predators. But I'm a little bit more raising my eyebrows at that than I was this time a couple of weeks ago. Like, when the deadline came and went, I thought to myself, okay, well, a lot of people are going to freak out about this, but it'll get done. And now that it's been almost a month later, there's still plenty of time to get it done before free agency begins. But it does make me wonder, like, how far apart are they and who, and like, can you bridge this gap at any point?
I figured it'd be about a week after the deadline because that does happen sometimes.
Sure.
I just figured, okay, now, here it is. Everyone's freaking out. Come together, get serious, get it done. So, yeah, I think the concern level has gone up. And I agree with you that Forsberg wants to be here, but look, if Forsberg thinks that someone on the open market is just way beyond what Poile is offering him, and this is his chance, this is it. This is your time to get paid. And again, maybe I've thought all along things got better in terms of the outlook for this when the team got better and when he could look, when Forsberg could look at the future of this team and say, okay, this nucleus actually can go forward with the young guys coming in and with Saros and everything else and be winners. And maybe there's a little hesitation there. I don't know.
We'll see if he gets to 40 tonight. If he can get a couple goals tonight, he'll be at 40. Him and Duchesne tied, by the way, in the race for the goal-scoring lead for the Predators. And we had a text earlier say maybe if he gets 40, that's the contract's already agreed to. It's $9 million if he gets 40, and it's $8 if he doesn't. So we'll see what happens on that front. Max Herz, our poll question at 102.5 The Game regarding the Memphis Grizzlies has closed. What are the results?
It has closed. And I'm watching every game. The most emphatic yes won with a resounding 46% out of the four options. Next was the least enthusiastic result, which was who's Steven Adams? I'm worried people thought that was like a Jeopardy-style answer now that I read it back.
Yeah.
And then third was the second most optimistic, which was we'll follow when I can. That was 19%. Who's Steven Adams had 27%, by the way. So it was 46 resounding yes, 27 resounding no, 19% mild yes, and then 7% was the second most negative, which was only from West Finals on. So they got to win a couple rounds for you.
There you go.
That's overall pretty positive toward the Grizzlies.
Yeah, almost half, I would say so. Out of four choices.
Not bad.
All right. We're all Grizzlies tomorrow. Let's go.
That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Darren Donica, Chase up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.